This is Movies for the Blind, episode 122, Hell's House, part 2.
Say, Shorty, how do you spell terrible? Oh, never mind how you spell it, just write it.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with Hell's House, and while Betty Davis and Pat O'Brien got top billing, the real stars are two kids named Junior. Junior Durkin, who's playing Jimmy, got a break in movies playing Huckleberry Finn in a version of Tom Sawyer when he was 15, then got his own Huckleberry Finn movie the next year. He was in this film the year after that at age 17. Our shorty, Junior Coughlin, was a year younger, but had been packing in acting credits since he moved with his parents to Hollywood when he was a baby. 3 years after Hell's House, Junior Durkin's life was cut very short. In a car with fellow child star Jackie Coogan, Coogan's father and four others, he was killed in a crash, which only Jackie Coogan survived. Junior Coughlin, meanwhile, went on to a very long career and a very long life, passing away just in 2009, at the age of 93. For now, Jimmy and Shorty are stuck in reform school under oppressive conditions. Jimmy's there because he was caught working for bootlegger Kelly, Pat O'Brien, and wouldn't rat him out. Shorty's been helping him, protected to an extent by his weak heart. Newspaper editor Gephardt wants to visit the school and learn about the real state of it, but can only do that with the help of his friend, Superintendent Thompson. So, we'll see if the truth does come out in the conclusion of Hell's House. At Henry and Emma's dinner table...
What's the good of my standing over a stove half the day if you don't eat something?
I'm not hungry.
I don't see what Jimmy could have done.
But Mr. Kelly...
Mr. Kelly. And while he thought and we sat here, maybe we could have done something.
No, Emmy, Mr. Kelly did everything he could. He used all of his influence and he couldn't do nothing. What could we have done? At least we can go up to the school and see him as soon as Mr. Kelly gets us that pass.
At Peggy's place. Peggy answers her door. And Kelly steps in.
Hiya, baby.
He holds her.
Stop it.
She smiles.
What's the matter with
you? Well, I just washed my hands and I can't do a thing with them.
He kisses her and steps back.
Say, get a pipe of that new backdrop, will you?
He shows off his suit.
Gee, I bet you had to fight the women off every step of the way.
No, I fixed that. I got a police guard.
Have you heard from Jimmy?
No, not a word. Oh, I guess he's gone for good.
He sits.
You know, I can't get that poor kid off my mind. How could a boy just disappear?
I don't know. I can't figure it. Haven't I tried everything? Police, hospital, sheriff's office? Well, I guess he just beat it.
I know. I was just wondering
Just like I told you, sweetheart. He perhaps got tired of the city and homesick for the old town and just blew. You know how kids are. They don't think. Say, how's for you getting under that derby of yours? We got a lot of staying up to do tonight.
Just a minute.
She steps away and leaves the room. Kelly's smile fades as he gets up and walks around. Stepping to a table beside the door, he gets a cigarette from a box on it, then notices his reflection in a mirror above it.
What a heel you are, Kelly.
At night at the school, Shorty looks up at Jimmy on the top bunk.
Hey, Jimmy.
Yeah?
How you coming?
All right, but gosh, it's hard writing in the dark. Hope Mr. Kelly will be able to read it.
As Jimmy writes a letter, Shorty looks around for guards.
Say, Shorty.
Yeah?
I don't see how this will ever get to him if I don't sign it or address it.
Okay, big boy. You see, I slip to this guy in the hospital and tell him the address. Then he writes it on the envelope when he gets it outside.
Say, Shorty.
Yeah?
How do you spell terrible?
Oh, never mind how you spell it. Just write it.
Coming to the part about getting you out, too. We're going to stick together.
Okay, big boy.
Later at the school hospital.
What's the matter with you?
I swallowed a couple of peas.
You're lucky to get peas. What about it?
Oh, I mean in print shop, type.
Waiting with another boy, Shorty watches a pair of doors.
I think it'd be good for me to keep on working.
Work won't hurt you. There's only one thing to fix you up.
I'm beginning to feel fine.
The water's over. Next.
As the other boy stands, another rolls a hamper through the doors, and Shorty stops him.
I'm getting them dizzy spells.
Shorty shows the letter, but the boy shakes his head.
Yeah, in the brickyard.
Stopped again. The boy refuses to take the letter and moves on.
But here's some aspirin.
Shorty slips the envelope with the letter back under his uniform.
Next.
He stares after the boy.
Next.
He keeps staring. And the man looks back.
Hey, you. You're next.
Slowly, Shorty gets up and hesitantly approaches him.
What's the matter now?
Well, I thought maybe you could give me some of that medicine the doctor gives me.
The man picks up a stethoscope.
Oh, well, I don't feel so awful bad now. I think maybe I could come back when the doctor's here.
Come here.
Pulling him closer, the man puts the stethoscope on Shorty's chest, right over the envelope. He looks at the boy, then tries again, and puts his ear closer.
Unbutton your coat.
As the man puts down the stethoscope, Shorty, with dread, starts unbuttoning his uniform. The man reaches inside and pulls out the envelope. Opening it, he takes out the letter and reads. He puts it back and gets up from his desk.
Come on.
Resigned, Shorty lets the man pull him to another door and take him through. Later, with the man, the guard captain, and another guard, he writes.
All right, let's have it.
Shorty looks up and gives the captain what he's written. It's compared to the letter.
Well, your writing is nothing like this. Now, who wrote that?
I did. It looks like that. You see, I wrote it in the dark.
Now, listen. You've been here long enough to know it's a serious offense to try to sneak a letter out, especially one that criticizes the school. Now, you tell me who wrote this, and I'll go easy on you. If you don't, I'm going to give you solitary.
I did it, I tell you.
All right, have it your own way. You wrote it, so you get 6 days in solitary confinement.
You couldn't put me in solitary.
Tell me who wrote this letter. All right, take him away.
Come on.
The man opens a door for the other guard, who escorts Shorty out. Later, as a guard reads outside a barred door, down the hall beyond it, Shorty lies on a slab held up by chains in a tiny dark room with a pail on the floor. He turns on his side, trying to sleep, a thin sheet wrapped around his frail body. In the brickyard...
Have you got 13144 here?
Over there.
The guard follows the direction to Jimmy, who has taken Shorty's place throwing the bricks up to other kids.
13144. 13144.
Yes, sir.
The guard approaches him.
How would you like to be a monitor?
Oh, I don't know.
We need more monitors, and you've been recommended. If I were you, I'd take it. Get better food, better sleeping quarters, special privileges. Of course, you get your responsibilities.
I guess so.
Well, come on.
After throwing another few bricks, he follows the guard away. Later, boys return to their bunk beds in the long, dimly lit bunk room. Jimmy walks in with a monitor band around his left sleeve. Beside his bunk, he gets a tin cup and a towel. When he steps back around the bunk bed, he looks down at Shorty's empty lower bunk, then turns to another boy.
Where's Shorty?
The boy notices the band.
How should I know?
Touching the band, Jimmy accepts this. In the correction room, A guard sits watching several boys stand in a line and several more sit in a line in front of them. Jimmy enters and closes the door as the boys continue facing the same way, slightly upward, with their hands behind their backs. Jimmy turns to the guard.
You supposed to relieve me?
Yes, sir.
He picks up a cane.
Those on the mourner's bench have got 2 hours more to go. You've got to see that they keep their eyes on that line every minute of it.
A straight line across the top of a blackboard.
Those on the chalk line can loosen up 45 minutes more.
Standing.
There you are.
He gives Jimmy the cane and steps away. He turns back.
You're the new monitor, ain't you?
Yes, sir.
Shaking his head, the guard goes to the door and leaves. Slowly, Jimmy sits down in the chair at a desk. The boys standing have their shoes just behind a straight line on the floor. Some of them have shaking legs. We keep them under control. Uncomfortable, Jimmy watches the boys sitting on the bench, who, like the boys behind them, stare at the line on the blackboard, some blankly, some blinking, some with practiced focus, some with mouths moving unconsciously. Jimmy himself looks up at the line, looming above the shadow of upturned heads. One boy on the bench wavers, but shakes himself to keep staring. Jimmy watches him, disturbed, as he wavers again, then falls over on the floor, staying there. Dropping the cane, Jimmy stands. Terrified, he steps to the door and opens it.
Guard!
He runs out.
Guard!
Another day, as a guard in the tower watches over the old school, a car pulls up outside the gates. Gephardt sits in back, looking out. Soon after, he enters the guard captain's office. The captain approaches him.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Gephardt?
How do you do?
They shake hands.
I'm sorry to have to tell you that Mr. Thompson won't be able to take you through the school personally. However, he's instructed me to see that you go wherever you want.
I see.
Now, what would you like to see first?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Gephardt leaves with the captain. In the correction room, boys sit reading books or writing on the blackboard as the captain leads Gephardt in.
Now, this is our correction room. The boys are made to study during a recreation period.
Gephardt looks at the boys. A few write on the blackboard. Several more sit on the bench reading, and another several sit reading on a bench behind the line where they would usually have to stand.
What do you use the white line for?
That? Well, occasionally a disobedient boy is made to stand with his toes to that line while he studies.
Gephardt takes a last disappointed look and walks on. Soon after, an open door floods light into the cell block entrance. The guard there stands and switches on more light as Gephardt enters with the captain. The guard opens the barred door to the hall and salutes. The captain leads Gephardt inside to a cell door. The captain opens it to show a proper bed, table, and mirror.
Now these are our punishment cells.
Is there anyone in them?
No. We only use these in case of emergency.
Down the hall.
More comfortable than I expected.
Shorty tosses and turns on his slab. When Jimmy enters the cell block.
Get back till I call you.
The guard pushes him away as the tour continues.
Oh, would you like to see the dormitories?
No, thanks. I think not.
They go on down the hall. And Gephardt later visits Thompson.
Well, Charlie, I've seen your Sunday school. So you lost your nerve. Double-cross me.
Jimmy returns to the cell block.
What was the matter before?
Never mind.
The guard unlocks the barred door.
Number 5.
and Jimmy takes a cup down the hall. The guard opens Shorty's cell, and Jimmy steps in.
Yeah, buddy. Hey, wake up.
He turns him over.
Shorty! Shorty, what's the matter? Guard! Guard! Shorty, something's happened to him. He's just lying here. Get someone, quick!
Get water. I'll be back right away.
As the guard leaves, Jimmy sits and gets Shorty to rest his head on his lap. Jimmy gets him to drink from the cup, then dips his fingers in it to pat water on his face.
Shorty.
His eyes are closed.
Don't worry, Mom.
Shorty.
Oh, don't cry, Mom.
It's me, don't you know me?
Gee, Mom, Jimmy's gonna be disappointed when Mr. Kelly doesn't get that letter.
Oh, stop talking like that, Shorty.
It's different with him.
Come on, listen to me. Listen.
Shorty's eyes open, and he looks up at his friend.
Jimmy, what's the matter?
Atta boy, Shorty. Now you're talking.
How'd you get here, Jimmy?
I was bringing you supper. You were just...
Oh, gee, that's great. I thought maybe they got you, too.
Got me?
What for?
Is that why you're in here? Did they find that letter?
Yeah. Only, I wasn't gonna tell you.
Shorty, you're doing this for me. It's my fault. I'm gonna tell them. I'm gonna tell them I wrote it. You can get out.
But that won't do any good. They'll never let me off. Kinda... I wouldn't tell him who wrote it.
Oh, I'll make him let you off. I'll tell him myself.
Oh, don't do that, Jimmy. That won't help any. They'll just put you in solitary, too. I'll be all right. The doc can fix me up.
No, fix up. Well, you told me yourself. They could never fix you up in this place. You need... good doctors and hospitals and everything.
I'll be all right.
Wincing, Shorty closes his eyes again.
I know what I'll do. All right, I'll get out. I'll get to Mr. Kelly. I'll tell him, oh, he'll get you out. Shorty, do you think you can stand it till I get a chance?
Shorty tries to look up at him.
Is that all right?
Okay, big boy.
He drifts out of consciousness.
Shorty!
Gee, it's great to be home, Mom.
Shorty!
It ain't nothing to die.
Oh, you're not gonna die!
Jimmy clings to him desperately, rocking back and forth. The guard captain leads two other guards carrying a stretcher inside.
Get out of the way.
The captain steps out into the hall, and the guards carry Shorty out on the stretcher. The captain listens to Shorty's chest as Jimmy watches.
Take him to the hospital. The doctor's on his way over.
As Shorty's carried away, Jimmy goes to follow, but is stopped.
Get back to your work.
Paul, let me.
Get back to your work.
I'm going with Shorty.
Wait a minute. If you're not careful, you'll lose that.
I don't want
He rips off the band.
I hate it. Driving kids till I can't roar. Treat them like they weren't human beings. Like Shorty. I'm going with them. Let me go!
The captain struggles with him.
Let me go!
Later, a work bulletin is posted with the numbers of those assigned to kitchen detail. 5 numbers are listed. Written in at the end is 13144, Jimmy's number. Jimmy helps move trash cans from a loading dock onto the open bed of a truck. As a monitor watches, he walks the next heavy can onto the bed.
You hear about Shorty?
Oh, nothing. They won't let you anywhere near the hospital.
You think he'll die?
No.
The two boys helping him step back onto the dock while Jimmy drags another can to the bed. Then it falls over.
Pick him up, you mug.
He pulls the can upright and starts picking up the trash.
All right, you don't have to help me. I'll do it myself.
You're darn tooting your well. I'm not going to let my dinner get cold. Get going.
The monitor walks off with the two other boys. Alone, he takes the lid off a larger can and takes out the trash inside, struggling with an empty box. The truck driver approaches the vehicle, and by the time he's in, Jimmy's in the can.
How about it?
Let her go.
He crouches, lowering the can lid, and the truck drives away with him on it. Later...
131-41-143.
Here.
131-44. 131-44.
An alarm whistle blows. And a newspaper headline reads, "Youth flees reformatory. Capture of James Mason sure, say officials." Henry reads the newspaper while Emma does mending in their apartment.
I don't see what good it does you to read the same thing over and over again.
Jimmy bursts in.
I got a lot to do. I gotta get... Is Mr. Kelly home?
He don't live here. Don't you know that?
I don't care. I gotta get Mr. Kelly right away. Where is he?
We don't know, but what good could he do? Oh, let's take him back again.
About that long as a shorty.
Shorty?
Yeah, I gotta get Mr. Kelly right away. Get my coat and a shirt. I think I know where I can find him.
Let me wipe your face off. Hold your head up, Jimmy. Hold your face.
Henry wipes Jimmy's face as he changes clothes.
How in the world did you get all that over here?
Later... In her apartment, Peggy answers the door.
Jimmy!
Mr. Kelly here. Better close the door.
Jimmy, where are you?
Mr. Kelly.
Well, well, well. How's the weather in China? Say, you ought to let your friends know when you duck out like that. You had us worried.
I tried to let you know in the quiet like you told me. But after the cops got me, I didn't have a chance. Shorty tried to get a letter out of the reform school, but...
Reform school?
Say, they sent you to the reform school?
Yeah, when I wouldn't tell them your name.
Glancing at Peggy, Kelly lowers his gaze.
What does this mean?
Well, when the cops broke in and found all that liquor, of course I knew right away they were trying to get something on you, counting your connections. I didn't want to see about that. But there's something you've got to do, Mr. Kelly. Not for me, but for a kid that's still up there, Shorty. He's sick. Unless we get him out of there right away, I'm afraid he's going to die. That's why I ran away. Oh, will you do something, Mr. Kelly? Gee, Shorty's a swell kid. You'd be crazy about him. We got to do something quick before they catch me and take me back.
You're not going back.
No, Jim. You're not going back. I'll get in touch with her.
He catches himself when he notices Peggy's hard stare.
Now, wait a minute. Let me think.
He spots a Times newspaper nearby.
I got it. Frank Gebhardt of the Times. Just the man. I'll go right down and see
him. Gee, Mr. Kelly.
Why don't you phone him?
Oh, no, you can't settle a thing like this over the phone.
Phone him and see if he's there.
Say, that's a good idea.
Stepping past Jimmy, Kelly goes to the phone. As he leafs through the phone book, Peggy comes up behind him.
Never mind. I know the number.
She picks up the phone and dials.
Hello? Mr. Gebhardt, please.
She hands the phone to Kelly, who accepts it nervously.
Hello? Mr. Kelly calling Mr. Gebhardt. Sure, he'll know. Hello, Frank? This is Kelly.
Kelly? What Kelly?
Why, couldn't be better. How are you?
Who is this?
Say, Frank, I want to come right down and see you. Listen, I got some real front page dope for you. Yeah, on that state reform school stuff.
Gebhardt smiles eagerly, but calms down.
Well, all right. Come down and see me.
Gebhardt hangs up.
No. No, Frank, I can't come to dinner. Thanks. But I'll be right down.
Kelly hangs up and sets the phone down.
Well, let's go.
Later, at Henry and Emma's...
You're not doing him any good by not telling us where he went. You don't want him getting any more trouble, do you?
I tell you, we don't know where he went. He said he was going to see Mr. Kelly, a friend of his, who used to be our boarder.
Where does this man Kelly live?
Well, we don't know, and Jimmy didn't either. He just thought he could find...
I guess they're on the up and up.
I guess so. Now listen, if that kid comes back here tonight, you keep...
And call police headquarters.
Yes, sir.
The two detectives walk out.
Yes, sir.
Well, Emmy.
Don't you go well entering me.
Outside, the detectives crossed the street to the cop on the beat.
You know a guy named Kelly that used to live over there?
Sure. Looking for him?
Yeah.
At the Times.
Will you come in, Mr. Kelly?
Sitting with Jimmy and Peggy on a bench in an outer office, Kelly gets up and walks past his secretary to another secretary at Gephardt's open door.
Oh, Frank.
He steps inside and closes the door.
What's your game? What's the idea of calling me Frank?
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Gephardt. I've been reading your columns so long, I just got the feeling like I knew you.
Uh-huh.
You know, what I told you over the phone, that front page news, that's on the level.
Gephardt leans forward at his desk.
I know a kid who just escaped from the reform school.
He picks up the day's paper.
This kid?
Yep.
Your boy?
Well, no. He's a pal of mine.
What do you want out of it?
Not a thing.
Kelly leans on the desk.
Except that he don't go back up there.
I can't promise that.
Kelly straightens up.
All right, the deal's off.
Now, wait. I can't say what I can do until I've heard the story. But I'll do what I can.
He's outside now.
Bring him in.
As Kelly leaves, Gephardt phones on his intercom.
Miss Maxwell, bring your book.
He makes another call.
Herman, break down the front page. Yes? Yes, never mind about that now.
Hanging up, he stands and steps around the desk to meet Kelly, Jimmy, and Miss Maxwell.
Jimmy?
They shake hands.
This is Mr. Gephardt.
How are you, Jimmy? Sit down.
He does as Maxwell takes Gephardt's chair.
Jimmy, could you tell me how you got into the reform school and what happened there?
Yes, sir.
Take this, please. All right, tell me about it.
Well, when I first came to live with Uncle Henry and Aunt Emma...
Meanwhile, the cop leads the detectives to a waiting cab driver.
Hey, Joe, did you haul Kelly, his girl, and a kid in the last hour?
No. Have you seen anything of him?
No, not me.
He turns back.
Say, Art.
And another driver approaches.
Who'd you haul that?
Why, a young couple and a kid.
In Gephardt's office.
When I got to Mr. Kelly and told him how badly Shorty needs help, he brought me down here. I guess that's all.
Just transcribe that as quickly as possible, Miss Maxwell.
Yes, sir.
As Miss Maxwell leaves in tears, Gephardt answers the phone.
Yes?
Telegraph desk just got a wire on the reform school, Mr. Gephardt. Kid died up there this afternoon. They say it was a case of bad heart. We're getting pictures.
All right. I'll call you back later.
He hangs up.
Jimmy, will you wait in the outer office? There's something I want to talk to Mr. Kelly about.
Yes, sir.
Jimmy stands and starts out, then turns back.
Mr. Gephardt.
Yes, Jimmy?
You and Mr. Kelly will do everything you can to get Shorty out of there right away, will you?
We'll do everything for him we possibly can.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy leaves his office as Kelly and Gephardt sit on the desk.
Everything we possibly can. Kelly, that phone call. Shorty just died.
Oh, gee, that'll be tough on the kid.
I can keep Jimmy from going back to the reform school, but I can't do it alone, Kelly. You've got to help me.
What do you mean?
Just this. I want a signed confession from you clearing the boy.
What's the idea of getting me mixed up in this?
The only way we can save him is by proving that he was ignorant of the nature of your business. And that means that you'll have to admit what it is and how you deceived the boy.
I won't do it.
You stand.
You want that kid to go back up there?
Yeah, but I ain't going to Leavenworth, and that's that.
The detectives enter the outer office. As one shows his badge to the secretary, the other nudges him. Turning to Jimmy and Peggy.
Hello, Jimmy.
Hello.
That's him. Come along.
Peggy stands.
Call Mr. Gephardt, quick.
Maxwell hurries to his office.
Mr. Gephardt.
Getting up from behind his desk, Gephardt goes to the outer office.
Well, gentlemen?
Kelly watches from the doorway.
This kid ran away from reform school, Mr. Gephardt, and we're taking him back.
Wait a minute, boys.
Kelly ducks back.
I'm interested in this case. Will you sit down here for about 5 minutes? Jimmy won't run away. Will you, Jimmy?
No, sir.
How about it?
Well, I guess...
Thanks.
Yes.
When Gephardt goes back into his office, the detectives and Peggy sit with Jimmy. In the office.
Well? Jimmy will be starting back in 5 minutes.
I can't do it.
Oh, you can't do it. You made the kid believe you're the greatest guy on earth. And then you hid behind him to save your own skin. You let him go to reform school because he wouldn't squeal when you told him not to. And now when you've got a chance to be the man he thinks you are, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to let him down? What are you, Kelly? A man or a rat? You're a rat!
He stalks back to the door and opens it.
Will you come in here a minute, Jimmy?
Yes, sir.
It'll be all right, boys.
Smiling, Jimmy returns to the office. Gephardt takes him to Kelly.
Jimmy?
He turns to Gephardt.
You've got to go back to the reform school.
His smile dies as he glances at Kelly.
There's only one man in the world who can help you. And he won't.
Oh, what do you mean?
Jimmy, you didn't know it. But the man you were working for was a bootlegger. The liquor in that place wasn't planted there. It belonged to him. And now he's too small, too mean, too cowardly to do for you what you did for him.
Are you talking about Mr. Kelly?
Yes.
Listen, Mr. Gephardt, he may have been a bootlegger. That may have been his liquor. But when you say he wouldn't do the same for me as I would for him, it's a lie.
You're right, Jimmy. You're right. You see, Frank's a great kidder. He's got to have his little joke.
I didn't think he was kidding.
Oh, sure he was, Jim. Get Peggy, will you?
Let me.
Gephardt goes to the outer office. And Kelly rests a hand on the boy's shoulder.
Well, kid, looks like I got to go away for a long time. Yeah. Yep. But after all, it's no more than I got coming to me.
But, gee, Mr. Kelly.
Oh, now look at it this way, kid. We're pals, ain't we?
Well, sure.
Sure we are. And you took it on the chin, didn't you? Well, no, I'm going to take it on the chin. And what happens? Mr. Gephardt gets a chance to clean up that reform school and do things for a lot of kids.
He taps Jimmy's chest.
That's the way to look at it, ain't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way to look at it. And Shorty...
Sure, that's it. Think of Shorty.
Gephardt opens the door for Peggy, who rushes into Kelly's arms.
Oh, please don't, babe.
Later, the front page of the Times declares, Governor acts on boy's story, promises immediate cleanup of institutions. Reading it, Jimmy looks at the caption, Jimmy Mason escapes in vain to save pal Shorty, and a photo of his friend.
How is it now, Shorty?
Sadly, he imagines the answer.
Okay, big boy.
Jimmy starts to smile. The End, described for Movies for the Blind. And that was Hell's House. Among the many credits in Junior Coghlan's career, some early Our Gang films, Public Enemy with Jimmy Cagney, some shorts that launched Shirley Temple's career, Gone with the Wind, in which he played a Confederate soldier who said damn before Clark Gable did, and Billy Batson in the serial The Adventures of Captain Marvel, where he got to say Shazam and turn into the superhero. Coming up, a happier view of law enforcement than what we just had, because by popular demand, we're headed back to Mayberry.
So we're gonna have visitors.
Looks like.
Well, I'll tell you something. Those two hoods are in for a big surprise when they get here. They're gonna come in here expecting to find some small town two-bit lockup, a rinky-dink clubhouse. Well, they're gonna find out different.
What do you got in mind?
I'm going to show them we're on our toes out here. That the Mayberry jail matches any big-time pen they've ever served time in.
Barney, there's no need.
First of all, we're going to get rid of all these extra frills.
We give them just what they get in the big house. One cot, one blanket, one cracked mirror, period.
Well, I guess we could take some of that stuff out. The doilies need washing.
More from The Andy Griffith Show next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. Also, check out the Movies for the Blind page on Facebook with exclusive previews and video clips. The MP3s are currently being hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. And the movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.